Every election cycle, dozens of legislators are prohibited from running again because of term limits. Critics say too much experience and expertise are lost through the process. Term limit supporters say it encourages new ideas and limits ties to special interests. Each side can list arguments pro and con. After 20 years in Missouri, what's the verdict on term limits here? Good idea or bad? With me are Paul Jacob, president of Liberty Initiative Fund. He favors term limits. Thad Kauser is associate professor of political science at the University of California in San Diego. He is opposed, and he joins us from the studios of the Empire NPR station in San Diego, KPBS. Chris Kelly is Missouri State Representative from the 24th District in Mid-Missouri, the only legislator serving today who also served before term limits were imposed in 1992 by a vote of the people. He joins us by telephone. Gentlemen, far and near, thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be with you.
Representative Kelly, I'd like to start with you and just get a sense, because you served most of your life in the legislature before term limits were imposed, and now a couple of terms since. How do you weigh term limits from your perspective?
Not most of my life, just most of the time that I've been in the legislature.
Yeah, legislative life.
I spent 12 years in the House prior to term limits, and two full terms now since we've had term limits. And I'm very interested in this intellectually, coming back. How would it be different? And I am surprised that I see more advantages to term limits than I thought I was going to see, although I continue to be an opponent. The legislators that come now are, I think, every bit as committed and smart and hardworking as the legislators in the bad old days. But they just plain don't know as much. And the lack of knowledge means a lack of power, a lack of ability to get things done. The power is like energy. It doesn't go away. It just goes somewhere else. And where it goes very much is to the bureaucracy and the lobbyists and to the administration. Executive vis-a-vis legislature, term limits always strengthens the power of the executive.
You use the term bad old days. What do you mean by that?
I was being cute.
Okay.
Just when we used to be back there and when we thought we took our jobs more seriously than ourselves. New people tend to take themselves very, very seriously. And you can see that. In the bad old days, we tended to take our jobs pretty seriously, but we didn't take ourselves quite so seriously.
I see. All righty. Well, let me get some input here from Paul Jacob. Paul, what are your thoughts about what you've just heard and where you stand on all of this?
Well, I love term limits. 75% of the people of Missouri voted in 1992 to enact term limits. And oftentimes it's sold to people or discussed as we've got to get the bad old politicians. And I think the reason for term limits is not to get the bad old politicians. It is to get more people involved in the process. We now have a district in Michigan where John Dingell serves right now in the U.S. House of Representatives. His father held that seat before him starting in 1925, almost 100 years, and no one outside of the Dingell family has served in that office. It isn't to say that the Dingells have done terrible things or are bad people. It's to say that we ought to have more people involved. These seats shouldn't be fiefdoms. And so term limits is a great way to get new people involved in the process, to break up power. The number one thing I hear from people who worked on term limits here in Missouri, Greg Upchurch, who's going to be part of this event on Saturday, others around the country, is that they're still not absolutely thrilled with their legislature. They've got lots of complaints. But the one thing I hear again and again is they're a lot less arrogant. And I think that the reason for term limits isn't because politicians are bad people. The reason for term limits is because politicians are people. And people, when they're given power, and especially, you know, the mayor here, you asked, you know, he's running for his fourth term. Is that going to be good or bad? Well, people like term limits. But name recognition is so big, And the power of the office gives him so many advantages in raising money. And this is true across the board, all offices, all over the country. You need something to break up that power. And term limits, some people have said, well, it's a meat axe approach. And I say, if a meat axe works, let's use it.
Thad Kalsu, there's a lot for you to chew on here and what you've just heard, but I have to take a break. So hold your thoughts, if you will. We'll come back and get them from you when we return. We're talking about term limits, good idea or bad. My guest, Paul Jacob, president of Liberty Initiative Fund, is with me in studio. Thad Kalsu, from whom you have not heard, is associate professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego. State Representative Chris Kelly is from the 24th District in Mid-Missouri. He joins us by phone. We'll be back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thad Kalsu, associate professor of political science at the University of California in San Diego. Thanks for being patient. You heard a lot just prior to that break. What's your response to what you've just heard?
Well, I think the academic research that's been done over the last 20 years, half dozen books, dozens of articles, shows that there's a lot of truth in what both Mr. Jacob and Representative Kelly are saying. So the first thing, and this has actually been a huge surprise, is that term limits has brought in a new set of elected officials who are in many ways a lot like the old elected officials they replaced. They're just as smart, just as publicly motivated. Demographically, they don't look very different. It hasn't really helped bring in many more new women, hasn't had a big effect on the demographics of a legislature. And most importantly, when these new legislators come in, they don't want to leave. So one of the great hopes of term limits was that it would turn back the clock on our politics and return us to the days of the citizen legislature of a century ago, where people just spent a few years in office. And then as the Oregon term limits law, which was called the acronym LIMITS, let incumbents mosey into the sunset, that they just leave. But in fact, what happens is you can't take the political animals out of these folks. They want to run for office. They're looking around for something else to do. And a majority of them either run for another office. And then if you add in the number of people who take jobs in the bureaucracy or become lobbyists, they want to stick around. They want to do public work. And so that means that these legislatures operate in many ways with all the same ambition as they've done before, but without a lot of experience. So exactly as Representative Kelly was saying, you have new people who are very smart, publicly motivated. But without the institutional memory, power migrates to the groups that do have that. And what study after study has shown is that's fundamentally the executive branch, the sort of agency heads, and most importantly, the governor who beat legislators more and more in budget battles, who see less oversight of their activities done by legislators who are looking to run for the next office. And that's caused a shift to the executive branch. Whether that's good or bad is really up to you and your vision of government, but it has changed this fundamental balance of power that characterizes our system of separated powers in the United States.
Representative Kelly, how long does it take a newcomer to the legislature to get the lay of the land?
It varies substantially. Some people came in, like last year, a guy came in from down by Springfield, a bright young Republican, very smart, very hardworking, was on the job right out of the box. And I can think of people who were there for a long, long time when I was there before who never got it. Got our process, got the way we make to get things done. But generally speaking, it takes at least two terms to get a sense of your field. And that's if you attempt to specialize. Some people don't care at all about the issues. They only care about the politics, as the professor said. But for those who want to, big thing for me in the legislature is who will work. I don't care what they believe. I care who will work. And the workers need tools. You can't get the tools right away.
Paul Jacob, I think the representative put his finger on one of the problems, that being that the guy who came in and hit the ground running is going to be term limited out at the same time those people who come in and don't get it at all during their terms. That doesn't seem like a good thing.
Well, I think it is a good thing. I think that when that person comes in who gets it and hits the ground running, that is the person in 8 years that you want to run for another office. You don't want them to stagnate in the same position. You want leadership to move up and continue to move up. That may be a future governor. And I think oftentimes in a non-term limited system, And we have a lot of those around the country. And, you know, just this week there was a report in Illinois which doesn't have the initiative process, so the people haven't been able to vote on term limits, and 79% of the people want it. So, you know, when you look around the country, you have states like New York where three people, the Speaker, the Senate President, and the Governor, control virtually every political decision for more than 30 million people. So, you know, there is another side to this. That's the unterm limited states and the record sorry. And I think you have people who come in a non-term limited situation who get it and who could move up. But because of the political reality, the power of incumbency, they don't want to give that up. And they stay in the same seat term after term after term. And we don't get the full value of their knowledge. And then I think you have other people, like the representative said, who never get it. But in a non-term limited situation, they could be there for 30, 40, 50 years instead of just for 8 or for 2 or 4 or 6.
How many states have term limits?
15 states have it for their legislature.
One five.
And you have, of course, a lot of cities have term limits for their city council. You've got 36 governors, I believe, is the number now that are term limited. So you have a real culture throughout the country where people, they understand term limits. It is supported by Democrats, Republicans, Independents, every demographic group. If you ever looked at a term limit poll, they're boring because about 80% of the people support it, and it doesn't matter what their race or political background or sex or you name it is. And so you have this dichotomy, I think, where the public very much supports the concept. They like what's happened. They don't necessarily always love their legislature, but they love the idea that these guys aren't going to be there forever. There's going to be open seats where the power of incumbency won't block somebody. And so even in states like Thad's California, they aren't very fond of their legislature, but they love the term limits.
Is that right, Thad?
Well, actually, California just became the first state in this June to amend its term limits law by a vote of the people. So there are two states where legislators have gotten rid of their laws. But in California, by a 61-39 margin, voters said, look, let's change our term limits to have them be a bit longer and operate differently. So we used to have the shortest term limits of the nation, 6 years in the Assembly, 8 years in the Senate. And this new proposal said, what if we give legislators 12 years and let them spend it in whichever house they want so they can get there, serve one group of constituents, one district, get on one committee, become an expert, and do what they want to do, and then leave after a dozen years? That kind of compromise, not a repeal of term limits, but something that changed the strictest term limits law in the nation to make a bit more workable, that proved very popular with the bipartisan collaboration of voters in California.
But Thad, let me give the rest of the story there, because I think if anyone who's read the ballot title in California knows that measure was predicated on making term limits tougher. That's what the language said on the ballot, is that this makes term limits tougher, and that's what voters supported. I don't think there's any question that if we put something on the ballot that makes them tougher, and of course you have to have a couple million dollars to put something on the ballot in California, and I don't have that in my back pocket right now, but if you did, the voters were supporting tougher term limits. And so the politicians and the special interests who were behind this effort were very smart. Our problem as a country has not been that our special interests and politicians are dumb. It's been the problem has been that they have too much power, and they put a measure on the ballot that tricked the voters of California. But the voters will come back. And again, they support the concept of term limits, and they like the idea that no one, even if they like the guy, is going to be able to monopolize a seat of power.
Chris Kelly, anything you'd like to add to this part of the conversation?
One, the guy I talked about before lost because although he was lost in his primary, because although he was pro-life, he wasn't a complete slave to the pro-life lobby, and they didn't like that, and they took him out. Second, my experience is different. My experience is that you have a real increase in power in the executive, and I like the idea that I have people call me up every day with ordinary problems. I can call the government and say, hey, listen, can you fix this? What's the story here? But term limits is a real transfer of power from the legislature to the governor, a tremendous transfer of power. And I'd like a legislatively powerful government as distinct from a executive power of government. People didn't gain any power in this. I contend that people lost substantial power.
Thad, your comment on that, the power being transferred to the governor, for instance.
Well, that is the thing that's clear across study after study. And again, that's something that voters can decide whether they like or not. I mean, political scientists, we can't tell voters what they should want out of their government, but we can tell them what they get out of term limits. And so there's another thing that picks up on what Representative Kelly was saying, which I think is a profound effect of term limits that some voters might like and some voters might hate, which is this sort of shift in the role of legislators from being delegates to being trustees. So before term limits and in states without term limits, legislators say, look, if it comes down to voting my conscience versus my district, I'm going to vote my district. That's who put me there. Legislators are more likely to be known to their citizens. They work harder on constituent service. After term limits, legislators are kind of freed from this reelection imperative. So they say, you know what? I'm going to vote my conscience. Not going to spend as much time trying to get money for my district. I'm going to look at the statewide. What's good for the statewide in a policy, and some voters might like that. Another unexpected change that's come with term limits is it's actually led to, rather than smaller government, which a lot of its advocates wanted, it's led to bigger government. Several studies have come out in recent years saying that states with term limits have actually seen a bigger rise in spending, no rise in taxes to pay for that. So there's been more borrowing, and their bond ratings have gone down. So the bond houses don't like it, but some people on the left might like the bigger government that term limits has counterintuitively created.
Just one moment, please, Paul. I don't quite understand how it leads to bigger government.
Well, think of it. If you're a legislator with just a short-term time horizon, you're one of the budget chairs negotiating over a budget, and you know you're going to be termed out before the bills fall due. What do? You have this moral hazard. You want to bring the good news today and put off the bad news until tomorrow. So you spend more and you borrow. That's what's happened in a number of states like California and others. This comes from quantitative studies across all the states. And so borrowing and making the future pay off the bills when you're not going to be around for it is completely rational if you're a term-limited legislator.
But, you know, what's interesting is I think the term limits in Congress have probably led to the fact that we are so far in debt nationally. Oh, wait a second. We don't have term limits in Congress. The reality is that policy changes. California, which I think drives a lot of this, has become a much more Democratic state. It has spent wildly in recent years. I don't know what the latest figures are, but I know a few years back that in the decade before that, their spending had absolutely doubled, 100% increase in spending. And so, you know, there are all kinds of things that drive this. But I think a lot of these studies are interviews with legislators and then extrapolation. For instance, we heard when term limits first took effect in Michigan, there were big stories about how Governor Engler had so much power because of term limits. They just didn't understand things. And then Governor Engler got his clock cleaned on a whole bunch of things in the legislature. And we heard that the problem with term limits was that it developed a legislature that wouldn't work with the governor. The truth is these things are going to ebb and flow. There are going to be some states where the legislature works with the governor, others where they don't. But the reality is, if you look at who opposes term limits, if this really empowers the bureaucracy, then why are the AFSCME, public employee unions, always opposed to term limits? Why is the Chamber of Commerce always opposed to term limits? I would submit that the reason that powerful interests on the right and the left are opposed to term limits is because it's tougher to get their way when they have to deal with new legislators regularly coming in. And so I'd encourage listeners, if they hear about these studies, to go look at them, because I don't work day to day in the term limits movement. I did a decade ago. And when these studies would come out, I'd go look at every one of them. And almost always it was interviews with legislators who often, didn't like term limits. Well, you know, term limits weren't implemented to please legislators. They were implemented to please the people, and the people love them.
Chris Kelly, have term limits led to bigger government here in Missouri?
It depends. It does lead. No, in Missouri it hasn't. But you got to remember, we got a balanced budget and a AAA credit rating. And we have a, both Democrats and Republicans are would go to war before they'd unbalance the budget in Missouri. And that is true before term limits and after term limits. But that your term-limited legislator is much likely to cave, much more likely to cave to constituent groups than is your the guy who's been the chairman of insurance for 12 years. He really knows the issues. He knows what's happening and how the business and the industry works. He's not going to cave to six people from his district.
But, you know, when you do what the people in your district want, I don't consider that caving. I consider that representing. It's when you do what the insurance industry wants instead of what your constituents want, that's caving.
Thad?
Yeah, I think so. I think I want to pick up on two things that I absolutely agree with him, Paul on. The first one is that, yeah, you can't believe surveys of legislators who all have just a self-interest in this, right? Every veteran who I've been to lots of states and interviewed lots of these folks, every veteran kicked out by term limits says it's the worst thing ever, and every newcomer says it's the best thing ever. And so all the research that's been done in the last decade doesn't rely on those surveys. It relies on hard numbers, budget facts, published in the top peer-reviewed journals in political science and economics, and it's very clear, and you can take California out of the analysis, and we have very clear findings that term limits has led to more spending, more borrowing, and worse credit ratings. Now, on the issue of lobbyist power, though, that's one where both sides, the proponents and the critics of term limits, had these very clear predictions. They both said, look, if you vote with my side, interest groups will have less power. Paul and his colleagues said, look, term limits is going to free legislators from having to worry about running for re-election, raising money from interest groups, and they'll be free of that power. The critics said, look, term limits will mean that new ones don't have any experience. They'll need to lean on interest groups. And all the quantitative studies that we've seen have showed really no change in interest group powers. Interest groups have always been fairly powerful in state legislatures. They've remained that way. And the reason they're not powerful is even though they've got all the institutional memory, legislators don't know them and trust them. And so those lobbyists who relied on being golf buddies for a decade with a legislator, they don't have that relationship anymore, and someone else takes the power.
That's true, and that's a fair advantage for term limits.
Let me interrupt this conversation as I have to. We have to take another break. A couple of points I want to make. Number one, we'd like to get some input from our listeners at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. You can send us a tweet at STL on air, or you can also reach us through Facebook. I also want to point out that the UMSL Center for Ethics and Public Life presents the first Public Ethics Conference, Term Limits, Two Decades of Lessons, this Saturday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the University of Missouri-St. Louis Millennium Student Center. Our guests on today's program are all involved in that particular program. We have links to further information on our website at stlpublicradio.org. We'll come back and continue our conversation and also bring you into it. Those of you who are waiting online, please continue to do so. My guest, Paul Jacob, president of Liberty Initiative Fund, Thad Kauser, associate professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego, and joining us by phone from mid-Missouri is State Representative Chris Kelly. He represents the 24th District. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation, which is today focusing on term limits. Missouri has term limits legislation, and we're talking about that as well as some of the things that are going on in other parts of the country with my guests in studio, Paul Jacob, president of the Liberty Initiative Fund, Thad Kauser, associate professor of political science at the University of California, San Diego, and State Representative Chris Kelly, who represents the 24th District. Before I go to the phones, gentlemen, is there anything any of you are just burning to say after our previous discussion before the break, before I go to the phones?
This is Chris. There's one characteristic of this that we haven't talked about, and that's the increase in the power of the political parties. In the old days, we used to caucus twice a session. Now we'll caucus twice a week. And both parties will tell their members what position they think they should have. In the old days, members of both parties would have laughed in the face of the Missouri Democratic or Republican Party who attempted to tell them what was good public policy. Because the party never cares about the public policy. The party only cares about electoral success. And both parties are horrible, and no one should ever listen to them. And now people sit there like turkeys looking up at a rainstorm saying, oh, isn't that interesting?
You know, this has been talked about a lot and blamed on term limits everywhere where you have term limits. But in all the places where the same phenomena is taking place that don't have term limits, nobody seems to notice. If you look at the U.S. Congress, if you look at state legislatures around the country, they have become more partisan. And part of that is a long-term trend in which you used to have a Republican Party that had its liberal northeastern or moderate wing, and you used to have a Democratic Party that had its conservative southern wing. Those wings are largely gone completely. And so the parties have become much more partisan. I don't think that that's a good thing, but I'm not a big believer in the political parties. I think that's totally a separate argument. And gets glommed onto the term limits debate when it really is not part of it.
Do you buy into that, Thad?
We've absolutely seen a long-term national trend in all the states towards more and more partisanship. I think the difference in term limits is that minority party hasn't been part of your past. You don't have the relationship. They're not going to be part of your future. So you just treat them terribly. And what we see is the majority passing more and more of their bills and the minority passing fewer and fewer of their bills. And that's a trend that's particular in term limit state. But overall, Paul's right. Partisanship is taken over everywhere.
We have a lot of people who want to get into this discussion. Let's try Lee calling from Olivet. Lee?
Well, I think it's an interesting discussion on term limits, but I think the origin of limiting terms came about when they wanted to limit the executive terms because of the concentration of power that governors could have. When you apply that same limit to legislatures, I think it's a self-defeating proposal because the legislatures are already an organization where power is diffuse. So by creating a legislature that's also term limited, what you get is a lot of relatively ignorant legislators who end up being like at the Missouri legislature, since term limits have been in existence, which really is a disgraceful circus every year. And I think the interest groups support getting rid of term limits because even though their power has remained about the same, it's a lot easier to work with skilled and experienced legislators, and you get better products regardless than having a series of amateurs who are being rotated around for the sake of doing so. Sounds like a great idea, but in practice, it's self-defeating.
Let me get a quick response to that first from our representative who is down there in the legislature, Chris Kelly. Thoughts, Chris?
I think the caller is generally speaking correct. The loss of ability and work ethic and knowledge, it overwhelms for me all the rest of this. See, all the pro talk is generalized kind of happy talk. I would bet that I think the voters have caught on to it. I think if this went back to a vote in Missouri, it might very well be repealed.
Well, I'd encourage you, Representative, if you believe that, to take that to the stump. Run for re-election on trying to get rid of term limits.
Oh, I have.
All right.
Got to remember, I'm an unusual beast.
You certainly are, and you may not be in that legislature to be unusual. But the reality here is, without term limits, you have had speakers in a number of states who had incredible amounts of power. And so, you know, we limit the governor and we limit the president because of the awesome power. But there is awesome power in legislatures, too. And that's why we limit them. And I think back to California, Thad State, and think about Willie Brown, who was called the Ayatollah of the assembly and who controlled that assembly like it was in his back pocket, which it was. And he's gone. And since then, because they have strict term limits, and of course, now that they've done their funny business on the ballot, you may have a little bit more powerful speakers. But the reality is, one of the things that we haven't talked about, and I think the biggest impact of term limits that was not predicted, at least by me and folks I know, is the amount of equalization of power in the legislature. Before term limits, the Senate president or the speaker or a committee chairman had inordinate amounts of power because they were going to be there a long time. And if you stepped out of line, they could knock you back into line. With term limits, legislators know I'm not going to be here forever, so I've got to do what I'm going to do now. And they know that that speaker's not going to have power forever. And so there's a great equalization of power. And we may still send the same number of numbskulls. That's up to voters to decide. But I think that the equalization of power and an end to these speakers who are ayatollahs is a wonderful development.
We have a caller from St. Louis City, Dave, who I think wants to make a point about having this thing revisited by the electorate. Let's take him into the conversation. Dave, go ahead.
Is it this Dave, me?
Yes.
Oh, hey, actually, really, this is kind of simplistic, but it seems to me that without term limits, or with term limits, you stand just as much chance of losing somebody really good as getting rid of somebody really bad. And just on a really simplistic level, I'd like to be able to vote for whoever I want to vote for. The other thing is, I think term limits actually gives more power to the party, and I think we've seen how bad that's turned out in this country.
All right, Dave, thanks for the call. Thad, do you want to respond to him?
Well, that was the challenge that most people had to term limits and the legal challenge, which said, look, you're restricting voters' rights to choose who they want, and you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater and the good politicians with the bad. I think voters, if you put a straight-up repeal of term limits on just about any state ballot, it wouldn't pass now because there's so much that's intuitively appealing to the idea. And the fact that we had people serving for so long. When I first started as a legislative staffer in California in the late 90s, there was a legislator there who was first elected in the 1930s. And that looked really bad to people. But I think where we may be going in across the states is having a middle ground of term limits that are a bit longer, that don't let anyone spend longer in the state capitol, but let them spend it in one house and do the job better. And I think that would be something that you could run on and something that's been proposed in the Missouri legislature and might have legs.
Yeah, I'm sure it has very strong, muscular legs in the Missouri legislature. But I think if it ever gets on the ballot, the voters are going to vote with the same 75% to say, no way. The idea is that somehow we're limiting ourselves. But if you look at the reality of incumbent versus challenger elections, they are completely uncompetitive and we get very little choices. You open that seat up and all of a sudden you have a number of people vying for that position and voters get better choices. So from a Democratic standpoint, some people want to define it as, boy, democracy is getting to vote for whoever you want for that office. But if you want real choice, and if you want the choice to decide the rules of the game, which is what term limits are about, that's the kind of democracy that gets people excited. And it's why this has taken off across the country. Virtually every state that has an initiative process has term limits. You look at the states without an initiative process where people can't vote on it, they don't have term limits.
Chris Kelly, your thoughts on this?
I do not accept the argument that speakers are were stronger in the old days than they are today. Because you have people who don't know how to fight with a speaker. The majorities in virtually every single house of freshmen are complete thralls to the speaker. And that wasn't true. When I was the budget chairman to a very powerful speaker, I fought with him all the time. And other people did too.
All right. Well, that's a point has been taken. Let's bring in Elizabeth in St. Louis County. Elizabeth raises a point, I believe, that is one we should discuss. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to talk about the fact that legislators can become lobbyists and lobby the very people that they just worked with in the Missouri legislature. Somebody like Stephen Tilley, who nominated Rush Limbaugh to the Hall of Fame, is now going to become a lobbyist and lobby the people in the Missouri legislature that he just worked with. And I frankly think that's disgusting, and I think there absolutely should be term limits.
Elizabeth, thank you for the call. Yes, Paul, a lot of people feel that they may have left the legislature, but they haven't left the legislature.
Well, and there are ways to change that. I mean, you can pass laws saying that people can't move from the legislature into a lobbying position for a certain period of time and so on, and states have done that. But one of the bright sides here is that part of the reason that especially at the national level that when someone leaves Congress, they become such a valuable commodity as a lobbyist is because they still know everybody in the building and they've worked with them for decades. Under term limits, you don't have that same kind of good old boy system that allows a legislator to then be a lobbyist just because of his political contacts. Now, a legislator may turn out to be a good lobbyist because he's an effective spokesperson and so on and so on. But I think under a term limited system, the revolving door between politicians and lobbyists is mitigated to a good degree. But there's also things we can do legislatively or through the initiative that we ought to do.
Thad or Chris, do you want to respond to that or shall I move on?
The caller doesn't like Tilly coming back as a lobbyist because she doesn't like Tilly. But there's just as many examples, you know, on the other side of Democrats who have strong opinions coming back and lobbying. I think the question is not whether Tilly is okay, but whether the idea is good or bad.
All right. Go ahead.
The shift we've seen in lobbying power, though, for the reasons that Paul says, moves from these lobbyists who have reputations, who make their name on the relationships that either they built up through favors or just through being a plain dealer and trustworthy for a decade. Those lobbyists have lost power. The lobbyists that have gained power are the lobbyists who have a whole lot of resources. An organization can go 10 lobbyists at the legislature to meet all these new legislators who has the money to plan their campaigns. Those sort of richer lobbying organizations have seemed to gain power at the expense of other lobbyists who built their power on trust and reputation.
Let's bring in Charles calling from Chesterfield, who has what appears to be another approach to this. Let's find out. Charles, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Howdy. And now for a refinement on the concept, term interruptus, where someone would get a few terms in the House or a couple terms in the Senate, and then they'd have to sit out about 4 years. Even if you went with the 12-year line in California and then have them sit out 4 years. And that would provide more competition in terms of who would run for office at some time. You'd have more experienced people running for office. And sounds good all the way around to me. Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
You know, it's an interesting point. When I was first involved in term limits, and most of the states that have term limits do not have a lifetime limit like you do here in Missouri. Arkansas to your south also has a lifetime limit. So does California. But most of the measures that we, when I worked at U.S. term limits, advocated had exactly what the caller suggested, a four-year out period. And that was – we didn't want it to be just 2 years out. Because then you'd be, you know, there'd be all kinds of behind-the-scenes machinations, someone's campaign manager or their spouse or what have you, to hold that seat, and then they'd come right back. So we wanted a little bit longer period of time. But I have to say, while I initially did not like lifetime ban limits as much as I did the consecutive limit, I've really changed on that. And the degree to which someone, and Thad talked about this earlier, that they get involved in the power and they have the bug and they have a hard time letting go, I think the lifetime ban may be a little bit better, which was not my original view, because it's one way to just say, look, somebody else gets a chance to ride the ride.
Only about a minute and a half left. Thad, what do you think?
Yeah, it's amazing. The John Martin, who is the longtime speaker in Maine, who is the Willie Brown figure of Maine, and term limits was very much aimed at getting rid of him. He was termed out. Maine only had a ban on consecutive terms, and he came back and then became a very important leader in the Senate. So I think that frustrated a lot of the proponents of term limits. But on the one hand, he didn't have any incumbency advantage when he was running for that new office. He couldn't use the perks of office to help him in the campaign. And so in many voters' minds, that was fair.
Okay, less than a minute left, and I want to give our representative a chance to get in on this. That's essentially what happened to you with interrupting consecutive terms, isn't it, Chris Keller?
Yeah, I did it. I went to therapy and got cured, but now I'm in Look, I don't
make it quick,
please. We've all talked about the interrupted idea in Jeff City a lot. I don't like it, and here's why. It's too cute and too complex. And you're going to have all the things that Paul talked about. people will get their cousin to run, which they do, to fill in the time, and then they come back, and it becomes even more complex and Machiavellian.
We're going to
have it.
We're going to have to leave it there. Chris Kelly, thank you so much for being with us. And Thad Kauser, thank you so much for being with us as part of this program. Paul Jacob, nice to see you, and thank you for being with us as well. Our subject, term limits. The UMSL Center for Ethics and Public Life presents the first public ethics conference, Term Limits, Two Decades of Lessons, this Saturday from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Millennium Student Center on the campus of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Again, gentlemen, thank you so much for being with us. Hope you have a successful day on Saturday. Reminder, by the way, that you can find more information about the current election cycle at beyondnovember.org. That's a collaboration of St. Louis Public Radio, the St. Louis Beacon, and the Nine Network of Public Media. Join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, and he'll talk about Dance St. Louis's season opener, featuring four world premieres by four St. Louis professional dance companies, a concert to commemorate the 100th anniversary of the Sheldon, and a film documenting the career of radio pioneer Bob Foss. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about ways to improve cross-cultural engagement in nonprofit organizations. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.